This is Genetics in Your World, a podcast by the Early Career Leadership Program of the Genetics Society of America, where we delve into the latest genetics research featuring highlighted content from GSA journals. This is your host, Sarah Gilmore, a graduate student at the Stowers Institute for Medical Research. Today, we'll be discussing the recent publication, Sanorhabditis elegans spermatocytes can segregate achiasmate homologous chromosomes apart at higher than random frequency during meiosis I, published in Genetics by Ting Gong at the University of California, Davis and colleagues. In this paper, they report a mechanism through which homologs of C. elegans chromosome 5 that have not formed crossovers can still reliably segregate during meiosis. Welcome, Ting.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to join you for the podcast today.
Thank you so much for joining us. So I'd like to just dive right in, get started by asking you a little bit about your career path. So how did you end up becoming interested in a career in science?
So for me, I was always fascinated by how biological systems work since I was a child. So I chose biology as my major in college. Actually, my parents are not happy about that because they have never been to college and they wanted me to study engineering instead because those are easier to find jobs. In college, I'm very interested in genetics and how genetic mutations can cause various genetic disorders. And after college, I did a master's studying endocytosis in C. elegans gut, you know, using C. elegans as autoorganisms. And defects in those processes are usually related to diabetes and many other metabolic diseases in humans as well. After that, I decided to pursue my PhD in the United States. And because I really like C. elegans, I ended up joining Dr. Fagnani's lab at UC Davis, studying female meiosis in C. elegans. That's how I got here and studied C. elegans meiosis here.
That's fascinating. I'm actually also the biologist child of two engineers. So I relate to that part of your story. So thinking ahead, what are your long-term career goals? Are you finishing your PhD shortly? Where is that going?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question because I'm right now in my fifth year of PhD and I think about my career goals a lot. I think I will for sure work in meiosis. I'm very interested in understanding the molecular mechanism of meiosis and how meiotic errors arise and what we can do to avoid or correct meiotic errors and infertility. And ultimately, I like to use what we have learned from model organisms like C. elegans, mice, or Drosophila to study to know how we can solve infertility in humans. I really like C. elegans, but maybe for the future, I will switch to bovine oocytes because I think it shares more similarities with human oocytes compared to other organisms. So that's my future goal I have so far.
Fascinating. Yeah. So do you think you're looking for a postdoc position in bovine oocyte meiosis?
Yeah, I'm trying to find a postdoc position working with bovine oocytes. There are a few labs in Europe, maybe one or two in US. So still like looking into that and trying to figure out my career.
Awesome. Yeah. So yeah, those questions of meiosis and correcting meiosis segregation errors, that kind of ties into the paper that we're discussing today. So I'd really love to go more into the specifics of your paper. I found it to be a very fascinating read. So you use this very interesting system in C. elegans where you have some mutants that can selectively inhibit meiotic crossover formation on just one chromosome. Could you explain a little bit about how that works for our audience?
Yeah, sure. So C. elegans is very special. In C. elegans during meiosis, which is a process to make germ cells like oocytes and sperms, homologs have to pair properly during prophase in order to segregate accurately during C. elegans. In C. elegans, there is a family called zinc finger protein families. They are required for chromosome-specific pairing during meiotic prophase. And this protein family includes HIM-8, ZIM-1, ZIM-2, and ZIM-3, which are some of the proteins we study in our study. HIM-8, which is HIM-8, it stands for high incidence of males. ZIM stands for zinc fingers in meiosis. So what those proteins do is that they can bind to pairing centers on specific chromosomes, and by attaching those chromosomes to other protein complexes, they're able to move those chromosomes around and search for their homolog pairs aren't usually paired properly with their homologs. Missing those proteins usually can cause pairing defects on specific chromosomes. For example, heme H, which stands for high incidence on males, if worms don't have this protein, the X chromosomes will not able to be paired correctly, and they will produce lots of males in the end. So that's how those proteins can mediate specific chromosome pairing in C. elegans.
So they're looking for sequences that are unique to that chromosome. Is that how they're believed to work?
Exactly. So pairing centers are repetitive DNA sequences on specific chromosomes. That's how those protein families are able to bind it to those pairing centers and mediate crossovers.
So you mentioned one protein, ZIM2, and you did a knockout of ZIM2 in C. elegans, and you found that you recovered more viable progeny and more progeny with the correct number of chromosomes than expected, and that this was specific to males.
Exactly.
So can you talk a little bit about this result? Was this result surprising to you?
For sure. So I originally started looking at ZIM2 knockouts in females. And when I find out females were making similar numbers of euploid progeny as I expected, I totally freaked out and thought that my thesis project just collapsed and I probably can't finish my PhD because of this. And then after I talked with my supervisor, we decided to turn to males. And then we figured out that the males actually produced more euploid progeny, which is very surprising. I think it is surprising in the sense that this is totally not what we expected at the very beginning. But then when we read earlier papers, we find out this is very consistent with an earlier study in 1979, showing that HEM8 males also has more euploid progeny when mated with wild-type females compared to females. So basically, the X chromosomes also have a similar behavior as the chromosomes we're looking at in this paper. So yeah, we're surprised, but not very surprised based on our knowledge with that.
So it aligns with what has been known about that protein in the field generally.
Yeah, so ZIM2, we know that it's important for chromosome 5.
Yes. So you observed that even though you do the ZIM2 knockouts, you still have some crossovers happening on chromosome 5. So does that suggest some other kind of mechanism for crossover formation that's independent of ZIM2?
That's a good question. A quick answer to your question is yes. We think there might be redundancy among those zinc finger proteins, which are heme, zim, zim1, and zim2, and zim3, that maybe zim1 and zim3 can compensate for chromosome 2 loss so that they can make crossovers when zim2 is absent. Or there might be other proteins that also belong to this zinc finger protein family that are functionally redundant to zim2, but we haven't been discovered yet. And also, we cannot exclude the possibility that there might be other pairing center independent mechanism that can mediate those crossover formation as well. So there might be many other different possibilities that could compensate for ZIM2 in this case.
So I'm also curious, you see this increased viability and euploidy in these knockouts higher than randomly expected. Do you think that that is a result of that redundancy of those other proteins to form crossovers, or is there some other sort of mechanism to account for like a loss of chromosome 5?
That's a good question. So from the findings in that paper, we found out that if you have 3 copies of chromosome 5, the worms are pretty fine and they are able to survive and be able to hatch, grow into adults, and also having normal babies as other wild types. But if the worms, they are losing one copy of chromosome 5, which we call them monosomy 5, they are not able to grow up and they are actually lethal. So the answer to your question is if they don't have chromosome 5, they will not be happy with that and they can't grow up actually.
But the trisomy, having 3 copies,
the trisomies
of chromosome 5
can,
is tolerated?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it is. It's very similar to humans where most monosomies are not viable in humans. Usually people experience pregnancy loss if they bury a monosomy baby, but if they have trisomies, they tend to grow up and then have like at least normal pregnancy and then grow up. But even though they still have lots of defects, even though they're able to have labor.
So this paper, you used a lot of classical genetics approaches, you used some imaging techniques. What do you think was the most challenging aspect of this project and of writing this paper?
Yeah, in terms of the techniques, to me, the most challenging part is to identify and analyze hundreds of progenies from those mutant parents to see if they are euploid or aneuploid. So to do that, I did genetic crosses of different worm strains carrying different polymorphism alleles, and then I obtained their babies and analyzed their babies by polymorphism allele analysis, because lots of the aneuploid babies do not hatch. So they are just dead embryos, they're just dead eggs in a plate, and they are very hard to work with. Like even under microscopes, they are very small and tiny. So it took me lots of time and patience to collect hundreds of them and analyze them. It is pretty challenging, but I'm very proud of myself having very good eyes and expert hands. So yeah, very challenging, but it's a very fun experience.
Yeah, so what kind of manipulations or what kind of experiments are you able to do with the inviable embryos?
So for the inviable embryos, usually we let them hatch, give them like 24 hours for them to hatch. And if they can't, we will usually define them as inviable. And we will collect those little embryos into little tiny tubes and do a PCR analysis to identify those polymorphism alleles and see whether what kind of polymorphism alleles they carry, and then to know what kind of euploid or aneuploid they are.
Gotcha. So that's a PCR-based approach that you use to determine the ploidy?
Yes. So we're PCRing for those polymorphism alleles on different chromosomes.
Yeah, thank you for that. It was a really clear summary of your findings. I want to kind of transition now into talking about some of the big picture questions related to this work.
Sure.
So I guess my first broad question is just, where do you think this story is going next? Is there more to be discovered about ZIM2, or are you moving on to working on other proteins?
Oh, that's a good question. So for sure, there are still lots of questions that we haven't figured out yet. One question is that we mentioned before there are trisomies, but they're able to be viable and also having viable progeny. So one question is, why those mutant, you know, trisomies are able to make viable progenies? So trisomy means that the animal has an extra copy of chromosomes. For example, the most common trisomy in humans is trisomy 21, also known as Down syndrome, where they carry three copies of chromosome 1. So for my project, I want to look at how chromosome pairing works in trisomy worms when there are more than two copies of chromosomes instead of just two chromosomes. We're very excited to study this in C. elegans and hope this will provide us some insights about how chromosome pairing works in unusual conditions, which is actually really hard to study in other organisms. And also, we want to know why males instead of females are having more viable progeny. This is also very interesting because we know that in humans, women tend to have more meiotic errors and also age-related infertility problems, but men does not. So we are wondering whether there are specific mechanisms present only in males that can correct crossover defects. So we're now looking at maybe, you know, protein candidates that can be participate in this process that might give us some insights into how things work in humans as well.
You mentioned earlier that you think C. elegans is a really good system to study these kind of questions of aneuploidy. Can you elaborate a little bit as to why that is?
Yeah, so C. elegans is a great model organism, because to study meiosis in lots of different organisms, people have to dissect the gonad. So people are studying oocytes in an environment that they're not connected to their individuals. But in C. elegans, because C. elegans is very small and transparent, we're able to study meiosis in the intact worm. So we can do live imaging on the meiosis whole process without cutting the worm out and then having the gonad open. So that's one thing that's really nice about C. elegans. And also C. elegans has already had lots of genetic manipulation methods available to either making different types of mutants and also tagging different proteins into the worms to see how meiosis works.
I'm also curious, you mentioned that you were interested in kind of like the sex differences in C. elegans and how that might kind of reflect some of the sex differences in the biology of human reproduction. Could you elaborate on that a little bit further? How is this kind of translatable to human reproductive biology?
So for C. elegans, for sex-specific mechanisms, what we have known so far is that in males, those are more similar to mitotic cells, where chromosomes segregate mostly by pulling mechanisms. So there are forces pulling chromosomes apart. But in female meiosis, where people have shown that there are pushing forces, so there are microtubules between the chromosomes, they can push the chromosomes apart. So those are the dominant mechanisms, segregated chromosomes in females. And this pushing mechanism is actually pretty conserved among lots of different species, not just in C. elegans. So we are expecting that this conserved mechanisms in males and also in females might be expanded to other organisms as well. And then studying those molecular mechanisms can give us insights into how that works in humans as well.
Fantastic. I'm also just curious, going back again to the C. elegans part of this project, you mentioned that one unanswered question is how they're able to survive as triploids, trisomes, having three copies of that. Is that something that you're actively working on now? And is there any part of that that you'd like to share today?
So trisomies, so those are really interesting topics. So there are already studies in our lab that have shown that trisomy worms, they're able to exclude their astral chromosomes into polar body. So during female meiosis, they will do two rounds of meiosis, and they will exclude three polar bodies, and only one germ cells, which we call them the oocyte, will be kept, and then will be for fertilization. So those astral chromosomes they're able to be excluded so that they are able to contain only the two copies that they need for the fertilization. So this is one mechanisms that we have known for trisomies. But for sure, we're going to look at more other trisomies on different chromosomes and see if there is a chromosome differential mechanisms and see if this is actually universal for all different trisomies in C. elegans.
Well, that's really great. I'm really excited to see where this project goes and what's going to come out of this in the future.
Me too.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It was so exciting to hear about all of your findings, and I wish you luck with all your future scientific endeavors.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. The Genetics in Your World podcast is produced by the multimedia team of the Early Career Leadership Program of the Genetics Society of America. We invite you to visit the Society's website, genetics-gsa.org, for more information on how you can get involved with the genetic scientific community. Thank you for spending time with us, and we hope to meet you again for our next episode.